Pocket. 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 We deserve this win, man.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to your refreshing dip into a 4-2 road trip. It's the Purple and Black Pill. Hello, friends. My name is Ty Foster. I have been enjoying the ups and downs of Sacramento Kings fandom since the early 1990s. Joining me, my best friend, a man who can claim the same, it's Duncan Smith. Hello, Duncan.
Hello, Ty.
And for the second week in a row, we are joined in the third guest spot. We are so excited to welcome from TikTok, from online, from my online friend. It is the one, the only, Jack Dan. Hello, Jack.
Hey, how you doing? I'm excited to be here.
We love it. We love having the youth on here. I was saying before we jumped on the mic to record to Jack that he is our token youth correspondent. He's a young person who is cool online in a way that is kind of not really possible for people my age, who is, I would imagine, the bulk of our listenership is people my age. And so we're really excited to, you know, rap and get just do some cool pastor squats and make it, things sound really fucking lame as we try and interpret, you know, the youth culture through you, Jack. So thanks for being here.
Of course, I'm ready. It's a gateway.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, it's a two-way street. So we're looking to really give you some, I don't know, wisdom. I don't have any of that, so I'm sorry.
I'm ready for it. I need the experience.
Teach you phrases from the 1980s and 1990s.
Yeah, we'll teach you about shaving a haircut, two bits, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, might need one of those things.
There's a couple things I want to ask you. There's a couple things I want to ask you before we get into the nitty and the gritty of the last week for the Sacramento Kings, Jack. First off, I just want you to explain for my geriatric audience a little bit about what you do. I have encountered you on Twitter as a guy who posts funny videos that you've ported over from TikTok, a lot of like game recaps. But why don't you just sort of like give the Jack Dan pitch?
Yeah, so I actually just in the beginning of like probably last year, so the beginning of 2023, it was literally just a meme page that I would just post funny crap I found on Twitter and be like, oh, you know what, maybe I'll get a couple likes on it, maybe some people will think it's funny, maybe they'll get some saves. And then eventually there was enough people that I was like, you know what, maybe I should just try and talk. And it started with like, oh, hey, these are the top five point guards for me right now. And then people like that. And then it was just getting more, building more and more into what is now 1 to 2 minute recaps of what are the NBA news is, trying to take a different spin on it, because everyone on, there's a really common template that goes around with like the more mainstream media, and people my age want something different. They want something funny. And during the off season, I was able to experiment with a whole bunch of different types of weird content. Like, it's the off season, there's not a lot of games to talk about. So I'm like, oh, what, Five Nights at Freddy's, some video game. I don't know if you guys are familiar. Mm-hmm. Like, what character is the most in, like, what is their NBA equivalent? People love that. People love that sort of thing. You're sort of bringing that weird energy into the sort of non-mainstream energy into content that people like me love.
Wait, what? No spoilers, but like what NBA player is most like the Five Nights at Freddy's guy?
Oh, I was really proud of it. I had some funny ones. So in the game, there's a mechanic where one of the characters can't go to the left. I was like, oh, that guy's just Jaylen Brown. It's the same mechanic. He's got the same built-in mechanic in the NBA. He's like, ah, Jaylen Brown, no left.
That was easy.
Don't worry about him on the way. It's an easy, it's a slam dunk. There's a big chunkier, slower one. I was like, ah, it's Luka Doncic.
Yeah. Little hairy. Yeah.
Little hairy.
Oh, man. That is outstanding. Yeah, you know, and that is why I think I felt sort of a kinship between this show and what you were doing, because we feel very much the same way about podcasts, where it's like, there's a lot of stuff out there that is pretty uniform in its presentation and in its approach. And Duncan and I both come from outside of like the media, and we don't really aspire to the media. We're sort of like entertainers, you know, and so our approach to it is just a little bit different. It's not like better or worse. It's just we are coming at it kind of from a different angle. And I felt very much the same way about your recaps, that you're throwing in pop culture references, you know, like it's just kind of whatever. It's just however it comes together, right? It's how it comes together.
Right. It's really funny with TikTok, because that in particular, since it's catered to such a young audience, you have to figure out how to get someone and hold them. Because if you don't get them to watch your video for more than 5 seconds, you're not making any money. That's the rule. Is anything that is less than a view for 5 seconds doesn't count towards like what you actually make at the end of the month. And I know that might sound a little foreign.
This motherfucker's talking about making money. This is crazy.
Oh, I know. Wow. It might be foreign to someone who's like older or used to like news media and TV shows, but getting someone to hold on and watch a TikTok video for 5 seconds is really hard. Attention spans are shot. You've got to just say something nuts or say something crazy, and then you're there. It's really difficult.
Super encouraging. You know, you're kind of fucked coming and going in terms of media literacy, whether you're young or old. Right now, it's all just absolute hyperspace slop. Awesome summary, Jack. I'm just really fascinated by the world of short form content and kind of the way that it's sort of morphing, I think, into more and more engaging and less like clickbaity stuff. There's like really cool stuff out there. I wanted to secondarily do a little tradition we have on the show for our first time guest, which is tell us about your supervillain origin story with the Sacramento Kings. I know that you're quite a bit younger than Duncan and I are. Perhaps we're not actually watching the Weber Peja Kings exactly. But what hooked you and how did you manage not to quit what has been mostly a terrible ride for your whole life?
So it's kind of funny. You're right. I was not alive to see like that really great era of Kings basketball, the Peja, the Weber, because I'm 20. My birthday was in 2003, so I missed all of that just barely. The first year of Kings basketball that I can like lucidly remember, like that was the year that I chose the little purple team, was Tyreke Evans. And a lot of people don't believe me when I say that, but there was something.
I believe you.
There was something about that little shifty point guard. And I was so blown away by the crossovers. He had that one really like half court buzzer beater. It was ridiculous. I remember trying to figure that out, like trying to do that in the local park for weeks. It took forever. And it was just because I loved Tyreke. And then the next year, Jimmer happened.
Oh,
and
man.
I almost quit. And then I realized, you know what? No, I do kind of like these guys. And I get loyal real quick. I like a lot of other sports. I'm not just a basketball guy. I'm a fan of a lot of really crappy teams. So I just get used to it at this point. I don't pick them well.
It seems like you might have been the jinx entirely. Like, you came around 2003 and the wheels really started to fall off. So, I don't know. Not like blaming you, but like, maybe.
That's true. That is true. But I did start posting content then. We started.
There we go.
So there's that.
See, that's the important thing. I think it's just as likely. 2003, by the way, Jack, is the year that Duncan and I graduated high school.
Duncan
just had his 20-year high school reunion this weekend.
Whoa.
And so it could be that us graduating high school and leaving town is what caused the beginning of the sinking of the ship. Mm-hmm. Who's to say? Either way, it's clearly one of the three of us or some combination thereof is responsible for what happened.
So who was on the Kings back then? Like Jack Twyman, Sam Lacy? Are those guys are up?
Yeah, it was like Oscar Robertson.
Okay.
We had a little bit of Tiny mixed in there.
Right.
I'll have you know, I won when I was in the Junior Kings Club in the 1990s. I won an autographed Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf jersey. And so I was around for that era. You better believe it.
Oh,
you should see the look on Jack's face right now.
That's great. That's a great signed jersey. Oh, my goodness.
It's really good. I wish
basketball signed stuff.
I wish I still had it. I probably don't. I do have my Ty Hesedny jersey, though. I'll have the world know. I mean, Tyreke Evans is just such a fantastic origin. I'm sorry about the way that turned out.
It's fine. It's whatever. I still blame Jimmer. Unless Jimmer wants to respond to my Twitter DM and then have an interview with me, that'd be cool.
I'm doing the math in my head, and I love the fact that, like, as a maybe 6 or 7 year old, you're like, this fucking guy, Jimmer, he's ruining my team. I'm just imagining you.
I was 11.
So
it was ridiculous.
11? Okay.
I was 11, and I was like, this fucking white dude from BYU is just, I knew it. Why did I fool myself?
He can handle it too. Like, that's the thing about Jimmer is like, what is he going to be mad about all of the adversity he's faced in his life? Come on, he can handle a little bit of shit talk from a podcaster.
Did you know that he had a brother that raps?
Whoa.
Do you remember
what?
That?
No. Does it have like an artist name?
Please go look up Jimmer Fredette's bro. I don't remember his first name, but I swear to God, he raps. It's ridiculous.
Well, if it's half as funny as the first name Jimmer, then like, it's got to be good.
Of course, Jimmer's got a Mormon Chet Hanks.
It's pretty good. And it's remember that these are the guys that were practicing in the church gym. Like, I'm really big into the Jimmer lore right now.
Cool.
They were practicing in the church gym with his rapper brother. And that's really not a joke.
Ah, that's so powerful. God. And look, like, no shade to Jimmer Fredette. It's a great basketball player. And people bust on this, but he's like a legend in China. And that's like kind of cool. Ask Stephon Marbury how cool that can be.
Yeah, it is cool. It's like being the world's buffest chipmunk.
Okay, so I just Googled it.
Absolutely. Duncan's just trying to glaze right past that.
No, I was trying to Google the name of Jimmer Fredette's brother, and apparently he has two of them, and then the world
dimmer and grimmer
sunk in as I was looking at my phone, and now it's really hard. Okay, so TJ is the rapper, and Lee Taft Fredette, we don't know what he does. We'll have to look into Lee Taft Fredette.
Like William Howard?
Wait, yeah, yeah, what? Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is he big? Is he a big boy?
Well, I mean, he's... No.
We call that presidential sized.
TJ stands for Timmer Jimmer?
Stands for totally Jimmer also.
Jacked.
Totally jacked Fredette.
Oh my God!
I'm gonna stop
this
looking
is
at my
too
phone.
Loose for having not even gotten into the freaking the outline yet. All right.
Jack froze.
It seems like Jack is maybe frozen. Jack, are you there?
Are you fucking kidding me? In the middle of really? In the fucking middle of this?
I don't know. I can't even text them because I don't have fucking internet.
What?
So, on Spotify, there is a song that's credited to TJ Fredette.
Oh my God.
It's called Amazing - The Original. And there's artwork that has Jimmer in a basketball in a BYU uniform holding a basketball. And I'm not listening to it because I have my headphones on this podcast. But it does have lyrics, like, you know how Spotify can see lyrics?
Mm-hmm.
And in the lyrics, it like references the NBA life and other stuff. And it also has the N-word.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And a lot of other stuff. So I'm extremely interested to see whether this is actually TJ Fredette or if somebody was just smart enough to call a thing TJ Fredette and then put it on Spotify.
He's being framed. Wow.
It's also a website.
Oh, there's an NPR article about this guy. Oh, it's got the dark look. Ooh, dark-sided face. evil, beady eyes.
Whoa.
How's it going?
Yo.
Hello. Oh my God, my power just went out.
Oh, damn.
Oh, shit. This is how powerful the purple and black pill is. We're causing a surge in your transformer.
My power just went out.
Damn.
Oh, my God.
It might be how powerful TJ Fredette is, because that's what I've been looking at this entire time. And his song, Amazing, which is on Spotify.
Yeah, Duncan's been doing TJ Fredette research while you've been gone. Duncan is now down the rat. I don't even know if we're going to have access to Duncan for the rest of this episode, because he now is learning. He's sort of like assimilating TJ Fredette information the way that Neo assimilates like different karate styles in The Matrix.
Right. I'm so happy I could introduce that to you. Oh my God.
This is out of control.
I mean, this is huge. Speaking of lore, like, we're big lore guys. So, okay, Duncan, is there any other critical TJ news that we need before we move on?
I mean, we're just going to have to listen to the song after the episode and try to cut it into the podcast where we can without using the extremely inappropriate lyrics.
Or just use them.
Or we use them.
It's explicit?
There's N-words, bro.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I thought you knew the lore. Here we are, you know, breaking news.
To be fair, I never actually listened to the music. I actually just knew he rapped. I never actually was like, oh.
This is where the purple and black pill takes it to the next level, because we don't have anything left to live for. So we just subject ourselves to that.
There's one song on Spotify and it's called Amazing, and I haven't listened to it yet because I'm currently on a podcast, but there are lyrics there, and the lyrics are not appropriate for a white person from Salt Lake City to be singing.
I mean, it's just tremendous. Just, I mean, if this is the only good that comes of doing this episode, it's more than enough, more than most, I'll say. The TJ Fredette thing that's a big deal for me and Duncan. I can tell you
Thank you, Jack.
Personally, on a personal level. Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Our boys played only two games in the past week. Patrick Redford, our guest last week, said that he would be glad if we split them. And that is exactly what we did. Just completed a 4-2 road trip. They cannot seem to beat the New Orleans Pelicans, which is vexing, but also kind of makes sense on a surface level. Any thoughts, Jack, about that New Orleans game?
It really irritates me how much I like the Pelicans.
I know.
It's really annoying. I've never really liked a team as much as I like the Pelicans right now. I was actually at the Pelicans-Clippers game in LA a couple of days ago, because why not, right?
Sure.
And they are a team that if you ever played basketball at any point in your life, that is the last team you'd ever want to face. I will take the Bulls. I'll take the 17 Warriors. That Pelicans team is terrifying. When little Jose Alvarado is like, he's shorter than me. It's ridiculous. When he comes sprinting at you headlong, you've got Herb Jones, you've got Dyson Daniels, all these just dogs on this ISO defense team. It's ridiculous. They come out and press at the other free throw line. They do not play like an NBA team.
Totally.
And it works.
And then they've also got these absolute giant mashers, you know, on the front line in Jonas Valanciunas, one of the last true big motherfuckers in the league, who, you know, has plenty of skill, but is mainly just going to punish you physically. Domas struggles with a guy like that. Domas obviously does not struggle with most centers because he can outstrength most of them, even if he can't outsize them. With Valanciunas, you can't do either. That guy is also Eastern European, you know?
Yeah, I have a massive Lithuanian fan base. It's ridiculous. So I don't know my sort of ascension was with the FIBA World Cup.
Ah.
I was like the only guy who would make content about it.
Huh.
And because of that, all of the international basketball fans that actually gave a shit about the tournament all found my channel. And I've got like this massive pocket of Lithuanians that anytime I name drop Jonas Valanciunas, the comment section goes crazy. Like, oh, Lithuva, I love Jonas. And they're great. And Domantas Sabonis being on the Kings like lends itself to that.
Of course.
But yeah, he can't beat Val at that physical bruiser thing that he loves doing. The other guy that he cannot beat, or he kind of can, is Yusuf Nurkic.
Mm.
And he hates that dude.
Mm.
There's some sort of European racism thing that's going on between the Bosnians and the Lithuanians, but he does not like that motherfucker. There is a look in Sabonis' eyes when he backs him down. It's scary.
That could be useful to us against the Suns.
It could.
I think Nurk frustrates a lot of people. Like, he's not ultra athletic, but he's so big, and he just kind of like, he has this sort of lazy man style of game, and then you try to dig into him and he's just sort of a brick wall. So like, it is kind of the perfect counter to what Sabonis does, where he's like, he's strong and powerful, but he's also a little bit crafty, and you know, Nurkic can just kind of stand there and be like, what, and block a shot.
Yeah, it's like that one picture of Boogie getting backed down by, I think it's Karl Anthony Towns or something, where he just does not care. That's Nurkic every single play. Every play.
I saw a pretty funny video of him just making no effort to challenge a shot by Julius Randle. Like, he was just giving Julius Randle the shot completely.
That's understandable, though. It's Julius Randle.
Why would he make an attempt to close out on a like 17-foot mid-range shot by Julius Randle?
My favorite Julius Handle nickname is Dubious Handle. It's the funniest thing ever. Every time someone says Dubious Handle, I cry. It's the world's best nickname ever. It's like, oh, here comes Dubious Handle.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Also, kind of sounds like a Harry Potter name or something. I like that it's...
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or just and some British person, right. You know. Anyway, the New Orleans Pelicans also continue, much to our chagrin, to employ Zion Williamson. And we continue to put Harrison Barnes on him one-on-one, which is at this point laughable. I mean, just free points for the Pelicans, pretty much.
I don't know why NBA teams don't learn when it comes to Zion. I watched that entire Clippers game, and I was like, Ty Lue's a good coach. He'll figure this out. He'll figure out that Zion is not going to shoot the ball, like, no matter what. There is nothing you could possibly, there's no look you could possibly give him. He is not shooting the ball. You know exactly what he's going to do when he gets it. He's a black hole. He's just like Christian Wood. And somehow they're like, hey, PJ Tucker, you want to go try and do that? And PJ Tucker can't do that. PJ Tucker is terrible. And Harrison Barnes can't either, for the record.
What's the solution? Like, build a wall and just take five guys and don't let him into the paint?
So my actual idea is to have Alex Len and Davion Mitchell just spend a lot of time together outside of games, develop an insane chemistry. And then when Zion comes to town, Alex Len stands on his back, and Davion stands on the front, and the big man, small man combo, they can't stop him.
Yeah.
Throw a trench coat over him, make him into one person.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Just like 1 9-foot guy.
Yeah. I could see it.
No, there's no stopping Zion. There's some players where you just have to realize he's going to get that bucket and he's going to score 20. It might not be efficient. The best thing you can do is make it a non-efficient 28, but he's going to get 28.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly felt that way. And it doesn't look like anybody else is going to have any more luck stopping him than we did. The issue with Zion, as always, is that he's played, whatever, like 120 games in 5 years. And that you got to figure that's going to continue to be the case because this guy is simply enormous. And basketball is a very high impact sport.
Less career blocks than Goga Badadze. It's a real fact.
This is why we pay you the big bucks here, Jack. That's an incredible thing to think about when you think about the hype that Zion Williamson came into the league with.
I think about Goga Badadze a lot because it was because of that picture. Remember the viral picture of Goga with no one and Zion with all the cameras at Media Day?
Oh, no. No, that's really funny.
There's a very funny picture. And so I always compare Goga. I was like, well, he's got more career blocks. It's Georgian Jesus with a G.
Goga. We love a Georgian.
More wins this season. Like, what's going on with that team?
Which team?
Orlando. Like,
oh, they're awesome. Have you watched Orlando?
Yeah, I'll tell you what's going on with them. I decided right before the season to become a bandwagon Orlando fan this year because I needed somebody in the East to keep me even remotely engaged. So I followed like 2 Orlando accounts on Twitter, and now I've just been indoctrinated into the Orlando propaganda army. I'm feeling it. Cole Anthony as a 6-man is like literally world class.
And Goga as a starting center is 12-5.
Goga's doing stuff with Wendell out, and you know, they got unfortunately Jonathan Isaac, who's very hard to root for various reasons, doing a lot
line,
of big
baby.
Things.
Yeah. That's his nickname, is the thin blue line.
So good.
Oh my God, that's too perfect. Yeah. Wow.
He blocks shots like it's the southern border. He's great.
Yeah. Somebody knows something about building a wall.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, someone proposed a 3-team trade in my TikTok comments the other day with Miles Bridges as well as Jonathan Isaac. And I was like, do you want me to quit? Do you want me to become a Warriors fan? I will.
That sounds like trolling.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was. He's Slovenian.
Oh, boy.
They don't have internet over there.
I see. Yeah. So anyway, you know, frustrating to lose 2 to the Pelicans. I will say it is nice in a way to keep our streak alive that we've only lost to 3 NBA franchises this year somehow. And here we are nearly into December. Pretty weird. Twice to the Warriors, twice to the Pelicans, twice to the Rockets, of course, back to back. Other than that, Kings win a lot against pretty good teams. They've managed to survive, you know, some very difficult circumstances here early in the season. Lots of injuries piled up in the last couple weeks. And, you know, so far so good. I gotta say, there's been some frustrating moments. There's been, you know, kind of young player lapses that you'll see mentally here and there. But I like to see them front loading the season with difficulty like this. It shows me a lot of character and, you know, a lot of stability in the coaching that I appreciate. Speaking of which, the next game, big one, in-season tournament on those beautiful powder blue courts at the Minnesota's Target Center, Friday night against Minnesota Timberwolves, who I think were 11-3 at the time, were undefeated at home and were really looking pretty dominant. Kings withstood an onslaught of Anthony Edwards' greatness and came out with a victory. Any thoughts on that one, Dunk?
I just love that they kind of came out as hot as you can be shooting, and NBA being a game of friends, obviously they gave it back, and that just is frustrating to watch in the moment, but the mental strength to not freak out about it and sort of secure the win casually, I really appreciated. And I felt like they were kind of hustling they played super fast in that game and just kept pushing. And I think ultimately it probably caught up with the double center rotation for the Timberwolves. You know, like when you play that fast against a team that relies on size that much, you can wear them down by the end. And I think that's kind of what we saw.
Yeah, I mean, Karl Anthony Towns just looked like an absolute goof on defense, as usual. But it was a relief, honestly, to see them get out to a big lead, give it up, and fight back again to get out to a second big lead in the game. I thought that showed a lot of character. They were also facing a player in Anthony Edwards who's similar, Jack, to what you're saying about Zion, is pretty much unguardable. I mean, he can pretty much get to any spot on the floor that he wants to. He's got that 3-level game. He'll kill you with any type of shot off the dribble, off the pass, whatever, cutting to the basket. We were also up against I always hate to go to this place, but we were up against some pretty significant free throw discrepancies and some pretty weird officiating, which I thought given the context of the game came across a little weird to me. I don't know. Jack, did you have any thoughts about any of that?
I try and stay out of the ref thing because you get into such a dark hole because it's so much fun to be like, oh, you don't blame the loss on the refs. You guys lost. Like, that's fun. And I want to be able to keep doing that. So I try and stay out of the ref thing, but it is obvious that Fox and Sabonis get the worst whistles out of any superstars. And it's ridiculous. I'm sick of it. The whistles that a guy like Embiid or Doncic or Edwards get, Fox doesn't get any of that. Sabonis gets into a UFC title fight every single game and finishes with like under 3.5 free throws.
Yeah.
It's the world's worst player prop bet.
It's strange. It's like, like you said, other players just kind of throw up slop. And I understand officiating to the letter of the rule. Like, if you're going to do that, do that. I also understand officiating to like the spirit of the rule and not allowing people to throw up slop and get rewarded for it, and that's fine with me, like, if everybody is officiated that way. But I do agree that with Sabonis in particular, it's just like, this guy is just getting absolutely crushed every quarter, every game. Like, he's bleeding. It sucks that he is so low on free throw attempts, like you're saying. Like, that's a tough thing to accept.
Speaking of which, against New Orleans, just back to that game real quick, there was some controversy in the last 2-minute report. The last play of the game, Sabonis ended up getting a bloody lip off of a Brandon Ingram elbow. Turns out that that was really rough, and that just sort of speaks to the position Sabonis always seems to find himself in, where he's taking an elbow or getting kneed or getting stomped on the chest or, you know, whatever. But it turns out that the thing that they actually admitted was the problem on that play was the very clear moving screen by Zion Williamson that freed Ingram up to get to the hole in the way that he did. And, you know, that to your point earlier, Jack, like, that kind of shit just happens. I mean, that is the law of large numbers. It's a very difficult game to officiate. That was a bang bang play. You know, it looked pretty obvious to me. But when it happened, I was like, this is not why we lost. Against Minnesota, if we hadn't shot so well and played so well and beat them by a lot anyway, you know, you might have an argument there. But as it is, it's like a footnote that's definitely worth noting in that game. But like, it, you know, it didn't really end up affecting the outcome. So how mad can you really be?
Do you like the 2-minute reports? They piss me off.
It seems to just be sour grapes, if anything. It doesn't seem to help.
Just do better. I don't want to hear about how much you screwed up and made me pissed. Just do better. Like, I don't want to hear that. Come on.
Absolutely. And it just ends up, as always, for us who, you know, ostensibly it's for the fans who are watching really closely. All it really ends up doing is confirming our priors about the fact that they're going to grovel to big market teams and not to us. Like, we know this.
Yeah, that, and also, like, that's one that I would put in the category that Jack was mentioning earlier of, like, I want to be able to talk my shit to other teams' fans and not be like, oh, we lost because of the officiating. And that a moving screen on like the last game winning possession or whatever, they're not going to call that. Like, that's never been part of NBA basketball, is like, or at least since I've been watching in the superstar era. Maybe in the 1950s they would have called that, but like in the 1990s and beyond, nobody is like, oh, there's 5 seconds left and the all-star has the ball, we're going to call a moving screen. You know, it's just gamesmanship at that point. So you have to recognize, like, it's just a smart play by somebody who knows to do it, or, you know, maybe he just got lucky, but never getting called.
Speaking of that big bias that you were saying about the big market teams, get ready for the world's worst officiated game on Tuesday. It's good. There is no way, I'm telling you, there's no way that they're going to let the Golden State Warriors get eliminated in the group stage. There's no way.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be in the house. And I am going to do everything I can to ensure that those referees respect the environment that they're in, because I would like to create an environment that is sort of more, not European soccer, sort of more South American soccer, if you catch my drift. Maybe not so safe of an environment for them on a physical level. And maybe they'll think twice about the marching orders we all know that they've been given. I'm also looking forward, of course, to the return of Draymond Green. I was there for Game 7 of the playoffs last year and for Game 2, the Stomp incident. Listeners of this podcast may recall my somewhat controversial opinion at the time that he's a very special entertainer. He should probably be in jail, but he is like an incredibly wonderful facilitator of mayhem, and that is a very powerful entertainment product. Having said all that, I feel as though the environment in there will be something new, like something sort of mutated from playoffs into like this new form of Sacramento chip on its shoulder hostility. And I don't know that we've hated a guy like this since Kobe, really. And we've got a lot of pent up dark feelings from the 2006 to now. And I do feel that there is going to be sort of the phenomenon of Draymond potentially lancing a boil and a whole lot of hot pus spraying him right in the face tomorrow. We'll see.
Lancing a boil. I love that. And the reference to South American soccer. That's so true. I am a sucker for international soccer. I watch it all the time. And Libertadores, the South American Champions League, is ridiculous. You see like 8 red cards the first 15 minutes. Those guys don't like each other. It's like war.
Yeah. I love it. And like, I mean, I say that I love it. What Draymond does, again, I get it. Like, I respect it in the sense that, like you were saying, Dunk, you do what you can get away with in sports, and you should. But the fact that he gets away with what he gets away with is pretty frustrating to me. I think he's a guy who's been ridiculously overindulged, given the fucking absurd self-victimization card that he plays every time. Wait, real quickly, I want to read you just a clip of some of the answers he gave at a recent press conference. Quote, "Anytime there's a situation and a teammate needs you to come to their defense, I'm going to come to their defense." This was on Sunday. "I know for me, I'm always going to be there for my teammates. That's who I am. That's who I am as a teammate. That's who I am as a friend. If I'm your friend, I'm going to be there for you, right, wrong, or indifferent. You look to the side, I'll be right there, if not in front of you." Only issue, of course, with that quote is that it is referencing a thing that didn't happen, because Draymond Green was simply not running anywhere near the person who was being affected at the moment and just decided to choke out Rudy Gobert because he thought it would be fun.
Yeah, he's just lying. He's just straight up lying. Like, we have just, as a society, we have just been like, "Here, Draymond, here's your platform, here's your podcast. You can go on there and lie. Just sit there and lie. It's okay. It's yours."
To be fair, though, like, it was pretty fun. I don't know. Like, I don't like it when it happens to our players, but Draymond really has given us more absurd NBA moments in the last decade than anybody else. Like, he is the Michael Jordan of doing shit that you're like, "I can't believe what I just saw."
Yeah, he does like a Malice at the Palace in miniature, like once every 6 months. You know, there's more quotes from this, which is this gets into an area of Draymond that I think is very underrated and under discussed, which is he's kind of got like a live, laugh, love, goop sort of energy to him that people are not tapped into at all, because he's so macho and like he like goes and poses with the IDF with like a big machine gun or whatever, and like that's supposed to be easy to identify. Like, you can see him and you're like, "That's a big macho guy." But then he says a lot of like woo woo kind of like fucking like I get the impression with quotes like this that he has like wooden things from Pottery Barn hanging above his fireplace or something. It says, "I don't live my life with regrets. Like I said before, I'll come to a teammate's defense anytime I'm in a position to come to a teammate's defense. That's what a team is. You stick together through the good and the bad. And I take that to heart. I take pride in being a good teammate. Oh. When I step in here every single day, that's number one on my list, to be a good teammate," says the fucking guy who nearly broke his friend's face last year. Oh, I love it. You got to respect that. That's like Trump level, you know?
I wonder what number two on his list is.
I was on his side with the pool thing. I don't like pool either.
Yeah, of course, who does? But that's, you know, Alien versus Predator. And who, no matter who wins, we lose. That's also, incidentally, the situation with Chris Paul versus Scott Foster last week. I don't know how much of that saga you guys caught. Oh, my God. Incredible. Incredible sights and sounds. Scott Foster just has, like, teed up. He's like, Chris Paul is, like, 3-17. In games that where his team's favored that Scott Foster has repped over the years. It's just so clearly like hack shit, like fake basketball occurring when Scott Foster referees.
Yeah, I've never seen a situation where it's so blatantly obvious that a referee actually hates the, like there's no way the NBA is looking at that and is like, oh yeah, like that's not a bias. No, Scott hates him. If Scott could say awful things on the court, he would. He's got that look in his eyes.
And I feel the same way. But unfortunately, as a referee, you don't get to do that. Even if I agree with you and feel that your cause is just, which hating Chris Paul is.
Is there like more news on this? Because the last thing I read about it was Chris Paul gave an interview where he said something that suggested that the reason that they hate each other is some like beef between their kids. Is that like a real thing? I guess people were speculating on the internet about that.
I wonder if Scott Foster was also fucking Kim Kardashian.
Right.
At the time she was married to Kanye.
I mean, be ridiculous.
Now that's a story.
He can't handle all that.
No.
You know, we all know that. He can't.
Yeah, Scott's a paper tiger. Anyway, wanted to quickly to just shout out the Kings. 3-0 in the in-season tournament. Obviously, Jack feels that the fix is in on Tuesday, but I am going to do whatever I can to prevent that.
Would that be decided by point differential if they both ended at 3-1 in the tournament games?
Sort of. Regardless of our result, if Minnesota wins, I think we advance. I think that's how it works.
I can't do this. I can't. I'm bad with word problems. Like, I just will do whatever they say. I believe whatever they say about what's going to happen. Hopefully we win and it's all a moot point.
Just keep winning games. That's my mentality here.
Just a couple other things I wanted to discuss real quick. Wanted to shout out in that Minnesota game, Kessler Edwards had a big one. He had 10 big points off the bench, played some fantastic defense. Looks like a, you know, serviceable wing defender who can, at the very least, put up shots. If he's not hitting them all the time, he's not going to at least be afraid to shoot him.
Yeah, he looked great.
I like Kessler. I get a little scared when we have to play him because he is a little limited, right? Like as much as he's a good vibes guy off the bench, and he is a genuinely very good isolation defender, we are at a level where we can't accept foolishness. We need the Kings to get, or at least I would like Mike Brown to figure out his like eight guys and leave it. Because we at a certain level, it's early in the season, it's fine, but we can't be messing around with this. We're actually a good team now. This is not 2017. We have to be able to be like, listen, you're a great Kessler, you're an awesome player, but you're just not gonna play.
Yeah. I mean, and use him as a situational player whenever you need to, and he seems like he's ready to do that kind of thing. You know, just come in and have one or two big defensive sets in a row and then sit on the bench and then catch your checks, you know?
Yeah, he doesn't seem like somebody who's going to be whiny about, like, just coming in to do the last possession of the half or something like that if there's an offense-defense substitution.
Yeah, he's great, though. I love him. I remember last year when we picked him up from Brooklyn, I was just, you know, I love trades. I love the movement of players. Some people don't like that. I like it. I think it's fun. And I'm always jazzed about whoever, like, even Filip Petrušev, like, I was all over.
Philip Dynamite.
I unabashed, unashamed, midi 2.5 minute long video talking about how good I thought Philip Petrušev was. And then he got cut in a week and never played. So sometimes I get bought into these guys. And I really liked what I saw out of Kessler. I think he's a great piece down the line, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to say with a team this good.
Mm-hmm. And especially once Keegan's back, obviously, that changes the nature of the rotation. We are getting close to out of time. Couple other things I wanted to shout out. Number one, after we lost to New Orleans, there is a dude I just wanted to shout out, fellow by the name of Jesse Brooks. He is a New Orleans Pelicans fan on Twitter, at Jesse C. Brooks. And this is the only good, like, Beam-related shit talk I have seen, and it made me laugh so hard. He said, Pels win 117-112 for a second straight win over the Kings. Pour the Beam. And then it's just a picture of Jim Beam with like a shot glass next to it with whiskey in it. And I was like, that's how you respect the premise of the Beam and talk shit. You make it New Orleans themed, you know, like they love to drink whiskey there. And, you know, it was wholesome enough. It wasn't really trying to co-opt anything. You know, it was doing its own thing. I really appreciated it. Good on you, Jesse Brooks.
Very few opposing fans know how to respect the Beam.
That's right. That's right, because they're jealous.
It's impossible to hate. Like, as much as the Warriors fans will be like, oh, like, you know, whatever the hell they say, shut off the Beam or whatever lame shit they pull out.
Exactly. You don't even remember.
what are you going to do? You are so jealous. You wish you thought of it. You wish you did. It's the exactly. best gimmick in sports. I love it.
Exactly.
I hope it never goes away. I don't care if it's like, oh, you know, it's only good with because it's rare. No. I want this forever.
I'm going to be telling my grandkids I was present in the season of the first beam, and they won't even believe me.
I remember when the beam was lit to celebrate wins of a basketball team that was only humans.
Mm.
That's what we're going to tell our grandkids.
I remember when the beam was lit at the ends of basketball games instead of at the ends of victories for the De'Aaron Fox Imperium on the field of battle.
Oh, is that what's coming?
Yeah, my friends and I have been having some light conversations about a coup of the state capitol and installing De'Aaron Fox as generalissimo of a bright new dawn, but that's neither here nor there.
He can lead the hell out of an offense. I think he'll be fine.
Exactly.
Right?
You know, and he just seems like a nice guy. That's a big deal for dictators.
Yeah, if you can run a horn double high pick and roll, you can probably run the state of California.
That's what I'm saying. How hard can it be?
Bar's not that high. You're good.
Never seen Gavin Newsom run the pick and roll correctly.
Only time I've ever seen Gavin Newsom on a court, he took a little fucking Chinese kid down to the ground with him. It was like, should have been illegal, probably.
What? He did?
Oh, yeah. Gavin Newsom, like, got in a non-court altercation accidentally with a Chinese child, like, 2 weeks ago during a photo op. He was supposed to be, like, doing something cute, and instead he fell down and tackled a Chinese child by accident.
Hell yeah. All right. Yeah, okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
That just about does it for us. As I said, Tuesday against the Warriors, we all know what this means. I know some of you will be there. I will certainly be there. And this is going to be one of the most deranged and frantic and sort of werewolf-esque Sacramento Kings live environments that has ever been. I really look forward to being part of it. And I look forward to doing my part to contribute to sort of an H.P. Lovecraft-esque experience for Draymond Green. I hope he goes mad inside that arena tomorrow night.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, and don't just, like, I know that the front office can't say this, but I will. Don't just bring, like, mind games. Bring weapons, you know? Like, bring stuff that can hurt people. Bring fireworks. Like, bring poison. Anything, you know? Do what you have to do.
Yeah. I was going to bring some dark tinctures, for sure, from my apothecary. Tuesday versus the Warriors, Wednesday back-to-back against the Clippers, Saturday versus Denver. Three toughies at home. We'll see, you know, the extent to which the Clippers are hanging together on Wednesday. And obviously the champs are coming to town, Michael Malone and his big, big boys.
Clippers don't scare me one bit.
Yeah, I mean, everybody seems to be pretty much on the same page that the Clippers are kind of ass.
They suck.
You just saw them live, right?
I just saw them live. They suck. Like, there's, like, genuinely, there's no way around it. They suck. You cannot seriously run an offense with four guys who don't know how to play with each other and then be like, oh, and by the way, our glue guy is Ivica Zubac and PJ Tucker. Like, that's just not going to fly. I was sitting there with, like, a whole bunch of Clippers fans, and it was the most funny thing ever hearing them scream, oh my God, get in Zubac. And then he'd get in, oh my God, get in Tucker. Oh my God, get in Jared. Like, they don't like any of them. They hate all of them.
Oof.
They're not a good team.
And for everything that it costs them to get this team together, yeah, woof.
Yeah. Shea and five first round picks probably sounds pretty good right now.
Oh man, it just hurts. Just hurts to even hear it. God.
That's a very Sacramento Kings trade.
For real, I mean, it's worse. Worse than anything we ever did. The Oklahoma City is lapping the field at this point, honestly, with how Chet is looking this year. That just about does it for us. Jack, thank you again for coming on, giving these two old chunks of coal a chance here. We really admire what you're doing and look forward to, you know, seeing you as you grow in this rapidly evolving TikTok/influencer marketplace.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It is seriously rapidly growing. You can find me at a bunch of new places coming soon. There's a lot of big stuff coming.
Sick. Yeah, everybody keep an eye on your Twitter. What's your Twitter handle again?
JackDanKF. There's a link to my TikTok, which is just Jack the Kings fan, and then my website where there's going to be a lot of really cool stuff coming soon, which is Codaball. Codaball.
Codaball, you heard it here first. Duncan, any sweet whisperings of nothings to our beautiful audience before we head out?
Yeah, I would like to say go Kings.
Hey, we love it. And that's it for us. So long, my friends. Bye-bye.
Peace.
This life is amazing. Bright lights blinding me from all the camera flash.
Everything I could is an older brother's fear. To get you to understand that you were given a gift. So with each other we would muster up a plan to succeed. With one another there's no wonder you would slowly start to climb to success. But it wasn't easy working hard with something that we would stress. So I pressed, was just you harder cause you really impressed me. When you told me that you wouldn't stop so you were the best. Oh yes, so how could I let you settle for less? And every time I knocked you down it was all just a test. But you get back up, I can see the dreams for the taking. When you were only 5 years old, cause it was truly amazing.